Welcome, everyone. If you have interest in hearing from an NBA superstar and learn how he transitioned from being a professional NBA basketball player to an up-and-coming real estate developer, you are going to want to hear what Josh Childress has to say. This guy was a first-round pick with the Atlanta Hawks. He spent 15 years in professional basketball and still has so much more to give. Listen and learn how he started small with a duplex and scaled up to a $10 million project and then a $100 million project. Before we jump into the intro, I want to thank all of you. We launched the podcast just a few months ago, and we already have over 250 five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts. This has been amazing and so much fun. If you are enjoying the podcast, I've got a big ask for you. Can you please send out a share with a link to your favorite episode on your social media? That's right. Actually, share the podcast with all your followers on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter, YouTube, wherever. This is your chance and your opportunity to take action and help others get exposed to the wealth-building impact of real estate. I thank you in advance for what you're about to do. Now, on to the intro.
Welcome to Darren Batchelder's Real Estate Investing Show. Each week, you will learn how to grow your wealth through real estate investing, be introduced to the players that are getting it done, and learn how you can get involved. And now, here's your host, Darren Batchelder.
A little background on Josh Childress before we start the show. Josh grew up in Compton, California. He lives in California with his wife and two young children. He played basketball at Stanford and after 3 years was drafted as the sixth pick in the first round by the Atlanta Hawks. He played eight seasons with the NBA and seven overseas. He started investing in real estate when he was still playing and 2 years ago formed a company called Landspire and is focused on building a behemoth real estate company so he can give back and help others level up. Now, on to the show. Hello, everyone. Today, we have a very special guest. We've got Josh Childress with us today. Josh, ex-NBA basketball player, now moving into the real estate world. And I'm very excited to have him on. So, Josh, appreciate you coming on the show.
Thanks for having me, Darren. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. So, how I know Josh, actually, this is the first time that Josh and I have spoken together. And how we got connected was actually through a mutual friend. So I interviewed David Tupin on episode 12. And then, you know, through that, I also met with David and his business partner down in Austin. And David was kind enough to invite me to an event that he puts on, kind of like a mastermind event with real estate investors. And that was held in Jamaica and just got back a couple of weeks ago. And when I was in Jamaica, you know, David just happened to ask me at dinner, hey, Darren, man, you know, what are you trying to do? What are you trying to accomplish? And I mentioned to him that, you know, on the podcast, I've had all real estate syndicators on so far and that I really wanted to try to branch off and get some athletes, you know, that also are doing real estate. And he was like, hey, man, I got the guy for you. And he put me and Josh together, and here we are today. So again, Josh, appreciate you coming on. Can you just share high level, you know, how many properties you're involved with and, you know, where you are just high level on the real estate side right now?
Yeah. Yeah. So similar story to probably a lot of people invested, you know, on the personal front in you know, single family residences for many years, kind of buying and selling homes, flipping homes, things of that sort. I did that while I was still playing professionally. And upon, you know, my retirement, kind of jumped into the commercial real estate space a little more seriously. You know, I've invested as an LP in a number of projects, probably in the 400 door range on that front. But then, you know, in an active capacity, I now have a 27,000 square foot retail center here in Orange County, California. I'm working on a 294 unit development project in Las Vegas, Nevada, and just was part of the acquisition of the Newport Beach Marriott here in Orange County as well, which will be kind of a reposition of sorts, upbranding the hotel and converting, you know, part of the project into for sale condos if possible. So working on a few different things. Last thing is kind of more of a passion project. We have a 75 unit affordable housing project we're working on in Compton, California, which is my hometown. So kind of coming out of the gate swinging, if you will, on the real estate front. And
you know what? That's awesome. That's awesome. You said that a lot of people start in single family. I went from a duplex to a 76 unit. I skipped the single family thing, but a lot of people do start in the single family world and then, you know, graduate going forward. And, but I give you props because you just keep up in the ante, it sounds like. So that's fantastic. So, hey, we're going to get back to the real estate side, but you know, I would like the listeners to get to know you a little bit. So, you know, maybe we could talk a little bit about how you grew up, how you got into basketball, a little bit about your basketball career, and then we'll come back to real estate if that works for you. So
yeah,
you mentioned you grew up in Compton. You know, I've heard of Compton. I have not been to Compton. I know Compton from the movie. That probably a lot of people probably know from the movie. So help us paint a picture for what it was like growing up.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Compton, just like a lot of cities, there's, you know, there's good and bad parts. You know, I was fortunate to be in a kind of a more family centric area. And there was a park, Enterprise Park, that essentially acted as the buffer, if you will, between, you know, a really kind of rough area and, you know, the street that I lived on. And, you know, where we convened usually was at the park, and we played basketball there. And that was the, you know, the for lack of a better term, the, trying to think of a word I want to use.
I'm not going to pick it for you.
but that was where, you know, two sides of society, you know, essentially met. And, you know, I was fortunate enough to meet a lot of great people there and, you know, had a ton of great experiences, but, you know, that park was, you know, kept a lot of kids off the street and I was one of them. So I was thankful for that.
Fantastic. Fantastic. So, you know, what about friends growing up? Were you kind of in a mix of friends where you had some friends that kind of stayed away from, you know, danger and some friends that kind of got into the mix? And if so, how did you protect yourself through that?
Absolutely. I've seen a ton of individuals deal with that process in a less than ideal manner, in either are, you know, imprisoned or deceased. And a lot of those individuals were super talented, you know, in the sports space and, you know, probably could have, you know, made it to the professional ranks as I did. But it's about your family structure. And I was very fortunate to have, you know, a family that made sure I was responsible and, you know, in my studies and things of that sort. But, you know, that's definitely a high barrier, you know, living in the inner city is, you know, can you navigate the waters, right? Can you, sure, can you stay out of trouble? Can you make sure that, you know, the activities that other individuals are involved in aren't so appealing that you, you know, compromise your morals and your ethics to, you know, be a part of those while also, you know, providing for your family. And that's a challenge for a lot of individuals. So, I'm very thankful that I had a family structure in place that, you know, kept me out of those situations.
Absolutely. So talk to me about your family. How many brothers, sisters, mom and dad at home?
Yeah. Mother was at home and I have two older brothers and a younger brother. So my older brothers are, you know, significantly older, 14,
were they in basketball 12 years. Also?
Yeah, they were. They were. Okay,
so you were fighting to try to keep up with them.
Yeah. Yeah. I was looking up to them. I mean, they were, like I said, 14 and 12 years older. So I would go watch them in their, you know, men's league games and things of that sort. And I always looked up to my older brothers, you know, and they were a definite driving force in my passion for basketball, and sacrificed a lot, you know, for my basketball endeavors, you know, waking up at 6 a.m. before work to go to the park and work out. And, you know, all those things that, you know, I was fortunate to have that other kids didn't.
That's awesome. And then, then from high school, you're a star in high school, and then you get picked up by, nonetheless, Stanford. And so what was it like going from there to Stanford? I mean, that's like night and day, right?
It's culture shock for sure.
Yeah.
But I enjoyed it. And, you know, that first quarter I was on campus was a bit rough, just getting adjusted to, you know, a different way of life. And, you know, I'm coming on into this, obviously, as a basketball player, you know, so I had a kind of a built-in network of friends, if you will. But the Stanford's a wonderful place. And I think that the type of people that I was around and the networks and just the people in general, it just breeds entrepreneurship. It breeds excellence, you know, and you want to be around and involved in people that, you know, are trying to do good and make things happen in this world. And that's the place that I think is, you know, parallel. I mean, there's no place like it, in my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, I've took my son's a sophomore at Texas A&M, not an athlete. But he is an athlete, but he's not a college athlete. But we went to Stanford. He's a very smart kid. So I was, you know, brought him there. I think when maybe his freshman year kind of set the bar. But you know, the funny story, I live in a town called Prosper, Texas. It's about 45 minutes north of Dallas. And, my wife had told me the story that this, valedictorian for Prosper, I can't remember if it was 2 years ago, three, 4 years ago, 4 years. But her dream was to go to Stanford, and she was valedictorian and she did not get in. And the mother called up and said, you know, what's going on? She's number one in the class. And Prosper has a very good school system. And they responded back saying, like, you know, I understand education wise, but, you know, we have to pick the top of the top. And she hasn't like started her own company or like has this like incredible vision for the future. Like, I mean, Stanford just seems to pull people that are just big thinkers, big thinkers. And some amazing companies have been born out of that, you know, university. So being surrounded with people like that must have really, you know, helped drive you. And I don't know, we haven't talked about it yet, but maybe some of those people, you know, helped you during your basketball career think about, okay, what will life be like, you know, after basketball? So you're at high level at Stanford, and what's the difference between playing in high school and playing college ball mentally?
it's a full-time job. You know, you're up 6 a.m. for weights, and you know, you have breakfast, you know, with the team, and then you're off to the classroom for, you know, for half the day. And you know, after that, you try and sneak a quick nap in if you can, and you know, head back to the class, and then you have evening practice. And you know, that practice is anywhere from, you know, 2 to 2.5 hours. You know, you give or take 30, 45 minutes before and after for, you know, rehab and ice and all that stuff. So, you know, it's a 4 hour, you know, chunk of your day, you know, on the back end. You go home, eat some dinner, you know, try to get some work done, and you're back at it again in the morning. So it's a full on grind, and I loved it. I loved every minute of it. But, you know, people seem to underestimate the amount of time and effort and energy it takes to be a college athlete. So, you know, it's a different animal.
Yeah. I mean, you know what, you're blessed to have been, you know, given that opportunity. There's so many people, you know, would love to try to play college ball, but you know, the glory days are back in high school. But not only did you make that leap, but now you're at Stanford for, I think, 3 years. And then you went into the NBA draft, and if I have it right, it was first round, sixth pick. Do I have that right?
You do. First round, sixth pick, Atlanta.
Atlanta Hawks. I mean, that's pretty incredible. Pretty incredible.
Thank you. Thank you. Awesome. And then, you know, as you mentioned, it was a blessing to, you know, see a culmination of many, many years of hard work and sacrifice to then, you know, be selected with a sixth pick and kind of realize that dream of making it to the NBA was incredible. And I, you know, there's nothing really, no other way to describe it because, you know, you're elite. You're, you know, in the best league in the world, you know, playing against the best players in the world. So that process and that being drafted was amazing. Mm.
I actually have chills right now because, you know, it's not, you know, maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think it's just about you. Like, you know, your brothers, your mom, you know, like all the sacrifices that they put up, you know, to get you to where you were. And then to have you, you know, land that success, everybody that surrounded you, they feel like they're a part of it.
Absolutely. And they were, you know, there was a ton of sacrifices, you know, financially with time, you know, missing out on work opportunities, things of that sort that, you know, my family sacrificed, you know, for me. And to now have, and thankfully I was able to have everybody in New York at the draft, you know, at the table, but to have everybody there and it just be this culmination of emotions, was incredible. And there's nothing, I can't even describe how that felt, because everybody, you know, succeeded in that regard.
Yeah, absolutely. I would imagine that there's even people, you know, from your hometown that just, you know, gravitate to, Hey man, he made it out. And like, he's inspiring, you know, the next generation. And so that, you know, with that comes responsibility, but what an awesome, awesome moment. Now you're in the NBA and you bounce around teams both in the US and also international, but if I have it right, a 15-year basketball career. I mean, that's that's some longevity there. I mean, how'd you do it?
I honestly don't know. it was a lot of work. It was a lot of work. You know,
a lot of work. What about self-determination, self-work ethic, habits, you know, any of those factors that, because, you know, where I'm going to go with all this is so a lot of those winning factors that you had in basketball, you know, are the foundation of what's starting now for you in the real estate side as well. So talk about how you did it. How did you succeed at that high level?
I think the biggest thing is knowledge of self, understanding how I work and how I work most effectively. You know, part of that 15-year journey, you know, I had a bunch of ups and downs in that, right? And there's, you know, the ability to bounce back, there's the ability to pivot and, you know, make sure that as an individual, I'm putting myself in the best chances, in the best position to succeed. You know, I spent 8 years in the NBA and 7 years abroad. But, you know, there was a gap in there where there's a fair amount of injuries. And that gap is when I actually went back to Stanford and finished my degree. And, you know, essentially kind of refound my passion for the game. I'd gotten released from the Brooklyn Nets and then went and played in New Orleans and ended up getting injured and needing getting a sports hernia surgery. So I got released from that team. And I said, you know what, here's a time for me to go back, finish my degree and, you know, see what happens next. And in that time on campus while rehabbing you know, started playing on campus with the Stanford basketball team, and realized that I still had, you know, a fair amount left in the tank, and you know, took that after finishing my degree and went over to Sydney, Australia, where I then met my business mentor, who's now, you know, will be a lifelong friend, a guy by the name of Tony Jans. And so, you know, you talk about putting yourself in a position to succeed. I told the team in Sydney that it was important for me to be introduced to business people in the community, because this was about more than basketball. And I'm now on a path for, you know, personal growth and personal development, and really put the onus on them to introduce me to individuals that could help in, you know, that process. And that was a game changer for me. So, you know, knowing what I want and how I work best, you know, being determined, being disciplined, being focused is obviously a large part of it. But also is thinking about, you know, how can I level up and be a better person that will then kind of help propel me, you know, for the future. And that is a big reason why I think I'm now in a position where I am today.
That's huge. You know, what made you make that decision to look for a business mentor while you're playing basketball? Maybe everybody thinks that way, but, you know, I'm thinking to myself, a lot of the basketball players, they're just thinking about, you know, excelling at basketball, and they're going to worry about, you know, the next stage when that time comes. So what made you make that decision to talk to the team and say, look, I want you to introduce me to a business mentor and some people in the business space so that I can start learning that process now?
The biggest motivator was the fact that I had a couple injuries, but also that I realized that, you know, as basketball players, we have a shelf life. You know, a great career in the NBA is 4 years, you know, and I was able to kind of to double that. But as a basketball player, you know, you have, I mean, at any given day, you tear up your knee, you blow an Achilles, you know, any of these things can happen. And then I'm kind of back at square one. So why not try and work on those things, you know, while I have some years left in the tank, and I can transition over those years, pick up some knowledge. And, you know, when I'm ready to retire, I can retire and you know, hit the ground running. So that was my mentality.
Did anybody help you along that way? Were there, you know, professors or coaches at Stanford or you know, other people that were in the NBA that were either retired or had been there for a while that, you know, helped you to come up to that decision? Or did you just come up with it on your own?
I believe most of it came from me.
But, good for you, man.
But you know, there's individual. I mean, you know, YouTube is a wonderful tool if used properly. You know, you can access information on anything.
You had to take the decision to like look stuff up and spend time reading and looking at videos and trying to research people. And you know, a lot of people I've interviewed have pointed to like somebody that was older that said, hey, you know, don't go buy your first house, you know, buy a fourplex and live in one unit, or, you know what, get into real estate. It's a huge wealth building. And, you know, and they grabbed a hold of it, you know, some advice that they got from somebody that was senior to them, mm-hmm. and ran with it. You, it sounds like you just had the inner drive and curiosity, you know, to want to figure out what's next.
Yes, but I had that person. That person just didn't tell me those things. But I had a person that I looked up to that was wildly successful in real estate, and he was actually my scholarship donor at Stanford. Mm-hmm. He's a very, very successful real estate investor. His name is John Arriaga. And I realized, you know, Stanford has this room. It's called the Hall of Champions, but you can see essentially every scholarship athlete, they have a headshot, and then who donates their scholarship, you know, or who endows their scholarship. And you walk down this hallway, and probably, I don't know, 100 plus of these athletes are, you know, scholarship recipients by Mr. Arriaga.
And 100?
100 plus, for sure.
Holy cow.
Wow. You know, buildings are named after him, things of that sort. And, you know, here's a guy who grew up in the Inglewood, kind of Compton adjacent area, and has had immense success, you know, from the real estate space, and, you know, is able to impact so many kids' lives, you know, and provide a kid like myself the opportunity to go to Stanford, which, you know, I never would have had, you know, from a financial perspective. So while he didn't have, you know, let's say words of wisdom that he imparted in me, you know, to help me through that, I saw what he's been able to do on the real estate side and the success he had. And that was, that planted the seed for, you know, for my future. So,
wow.
That was the genesis.
Cool. Very cool. And I mean, you know, yeah. It and I know it. And he obviously is the telltale example of it, that, you know, giving, you end up getting more back from giving than anything else. Right. And that guy just has a heart for giving. And so did that help? I was going to talk about this later, but now seems like a good time. Did that help you decide to form the Josh Childress Foundation?
That was a part of it. Yes. A definite part of it. But also, you know, that foundation was really rooted in opportunity. So kids in Compton, I used to go back and do a basketball camp every summer, free basketball camp. Kids could come out. I had a grade requirement. You had to have, you know, kind of a B average or better. And essentially I provide you with, you know, kind of a set of clothes, shoes, and then, you know, like gifts at the end of it, you know, of the 2 days. And I started to notice that a recurring theme, you know, in the Q&A session was, you know, when you ask the question, what do you want to be when you grow up? I want to be an athlete. I want to be a rapper. I want to be, so everything was entertainment based. And that bothered me because there are many more ways to be successful, you know, in this country outside of, you know, entertainment, sports and entertainment. So, the foundation was really a way for me to kind of get in, try to provide mentorship, and try to expose these kids to other avenues, they could be successful outside of sports and entertainment. And that was why I started the foundation. And since then I've, you know, helped, over 40 kids, with college scholarships and, you know, tried to create as much impact as possible, which has been, you know, a blessing.
That's awesome. Yeah. So, you know, where does all this go to real estate? Well, you know, I think that there's a lot of, you started with single family. There's a lot of people that start with single family and they can't get over the hump to go to the next level. There's a lot of people that want to do single family, but they're afraid to make their first investment. You know, there's a lot of people that understand there's opportunity in real estate, but have fear. So how do you press on when you have fear? You know, how do you keep leveling up, as you mentioned?
Well, I apply the same work ethic and the same principles that I had as an athlete to this space. And I realize that I'm not going to win every game, but over the course of a season, you know, I'll have success if I, you know, put my head down and, you know, work hard, work diligently, work smart, align myself with individuals who can help me grow as an investor and, you know, be a part of good opportunities. And that's what I've done so far. And I think that the model is working so far. And I'll continue to try and build on this, you know, over the years, but, it's about just being diligent and committing yourself to this process. And that is a definite carryover from, you know, my time in sports.
Fantastic. Yeah. So you're a winner in high school, you're a winner in college, you're a winner in professional leagues. And then you go and you decide to make the transition into real estate. You form a company, called Landspire. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And so talk about Landspire, when did you start it? What's your focus? And, you know, what have you guys done to, well, you kind of talked about some of the projects you guys have worked on, but how long did you get started and kind of what's your focus?
Yeah, so I started Landspire with my former college teammate and roommate, Justin Davis, about 2 years ago. And our genesis really came from the implementation of the Opportunity Zone legislation. And we saw that there was going to be a fair amount of capital going into under-resourced communities that didn't necessarily have a vested interest in these communities. And, you know, they were going to come in, you know, redevelop the area, make a boatload of money, and most of the community stakeholders would get pushed out of the community. And that didn't sit well with us. So that was why we started. Since then, you know, we've, you know, worked on a number of projects, and that's kind of our passion. But we also are you know, trying to be successful and opportunistic in our approach and take on good opportunities. And so, you know, that's why I mentioned the Vegas property, you know, in addition to the Compton property, because I think that you can balance the two, you know, if your mind's in the right place and your heart's in the right place. And that's where we are. So it's been a great journey, like I mentioned, you know, and a great learning experience. I'm actually also getting my master's in real estate at Georgetown University to underpin, you know, this business side of things and really like at a deep level, understand this real estate space, you know, from a finance perspective, from a development perspective. You know, I know, you know, it's a lot more powerful to learn by experience and going through the process, but I also want to, you know, have the formal education behind it, just to make sure that, you know, I kind of have the best of both worlds.
Sure. Before you talked about relationships and, you know, prior to this interview, I saw a clip with you that talked about your Vegas deal and kind of how that came together. Maybe talk about that for the listener's perspective. You know, here you guys, you and an ex-Stanford teammate, you know, come together. Did he have a ton of real estate experience, your partner?
No.
Okay. So
smart guy. He's
smart guy. You guys get along, you've got a vision and now it's like, how do we get a deal done? And so, you know, how did the Las Vegas deal come together?
So it came together organically. Our partner in that deal is a group named Lion Living, big firm here in Orange County. And I used to train at one of their facilities. And one of the things that they have kind of mastered is this highly amenitized lifestyle living. And this particular facility is called The Mark here in Santa Ana. And they have a rooftop training facility. And so it's turf, there's a incredible gym. And they've essentially created a one-stop shop for athletes and agents. So you can come, you can live there. There's a chef up top. You have an amazing training facility. You have a PT there. And it just became the place for athletes, professional athletes who lived in Orange County or who wanted to live in Southern California for the summer. So I met their CEO there probably about 5 years ago while I was working out. We kept in touch over those years. And once I was kind of made the jump, my partner, Justin, and I created a site plan for 100-acre development here in Orange County, and didn't know what we were doing, but had a vision for what this site could be. And, sure, you know, put a lot of man hours into, you know, that vision, presented that vision to the city, and the city said, "We love it. We think you guys are on the right track. We're going to come out with our RFP requirements here pretty soon." Those came out. It was 5 projects of similar size and a $50 million balance sheet. We're like, okay, well, we don't have either of those. Right. And so I call Frank and I said, "Hey, Frank, I want you to take a look at this site plan that we created." You know, I went into the office. 3 weeks later, we signed a joint agreement with them to present to the city. And, you know, that was just legwork on our part and, you know, just kind of making things happen. We didn't sit back and wait for somebody to approach us. we went out and were proactive. And, you know, now here we are partnering with a firm with, you know, over $3 billion in assets under management, you know, and we're just a shop that just started up. And that then led to, you know, some of these other projects that we're doing, because, you know, we provided value on their side and vice versa. And, you know, this just been a great partnership so far.
That's fantastic. So look, you played 15 years, you know, professional ball. I mean, people don't just show up at your door handing you deals. you actually still had to go out and hustle, right? I mean, you know, that's the thing is, you know, listeners, it doesn't matter if you're going after your first, you know, single family deal, or if you're leveling up to, you know, several hundred units or thousand unit deals, you have to tell people what you're doing, right? You have to put yourself out there. You have to tell people what you're after, and then you have to actually try to leverage relationships that you have. And you did both. You let people know what you were doing, and you know, you didn't know if that was going to go anywhere. Look, it may have gone somewhere, it may not have, you know, or he may have put you in touch with somebody else, but like you called him up and one thing led to another, and that's your first deal. And then you're on to your second and third and fourth. So that's something important. And look, you've proven that you've always been a go-getter, that you have strong work ethic, you know, but you still have to prove yourself every stage of the, you know, when you went from high school to college, you're at Stanford, you know, it's like, okay, well now you got to prove yourself at Stanford. And then when you went to the pros, you had to prove yourself. And then you retire, and some people may just look at, okay, he's a retired, you know, wealthy, you know, basketball player, but are they going to take you seriously on the real estate side? You know, and now you're proven that yes, they are. And so that's awesome. Awesome. I love that, you know, it means so much. It means that to the listeners, look, get off your butt. Like, you know, you grow up and people make excuses every day for why they can't do something. Okay. But Josh is an example here of, you know what, if you get out there and hustle, you can make something of yourself. You can do it, you know? So you're going to have setbacks. You had injuries, right? You had injuries. You went back and you played at Stanford with the boys and you were like, hey man, I got some room left in this tank. I'm going back, you know? And I'm sure you didn't even talk about it, but to be able to get back after that, I'm sure you had to bust your butt in the gym to get yourself conditioned, you know, to be able to get back.
Absolutely. And the mental component. I want to touch on something you said.
Yeah.
Awesome. You know, spending 15 years playing pro ball, you know, as a professional athlete, like people bombard you with opportunities. A fair amount of those opportunities are bad, you know, because they think that there's low hanging fruit and, you know, you can just go get an investment from these guys. And so navigating that is difficult. In addition to now, you know, post-retirement, having to, you know, make sure that people understand that I am a serious investor and I'm not, you know, just a former athlete. And while I think, you know, having that NBA tag and being, you know, from Stanford and all those things helps open doors, I still have to do the work, you know, and I can get a meeting. Can I get a second meeting? Right. And that's where, you know, the work ethic and, you know, educating myself and being prepared and professional, it comes in.
That's a great, great, great point. Two things come to mind there. One is not real estate related, but just, you know, I'm at the age, my son is a sophomore in college and I've got friends, golfing buddies where their kids are graduating college and they're just starting their career and whatnot. And I might, you know, be hanging out with them and I'm like, look, leverage your dad's relationships. Okay. Leverage your dad's relationships. I said, he's going to help you get the meeting. But mm-hmm. once you're in front of whoever it is, they're not going to hire you if you're not qualified. But why not leverage your dad and his friends and other people's relationships to help get you in the door? because it might save you 1, 2, 3 years of your life in terms of, you know, you may get a job that, you know, you didn't think you can get because you got in the right door.
Absolutely. I agree with that 100%. And I think, you know, that's part of my mission is now reaching back and providing those opportunities to my children, my friends, you know, and things of that sort, because there's a ton of opportunity out there if you go and try to find it.
You have to be looking for it.
You have to be proactive and have to find it and understand that, you know, your golfing buddies, you know, are probably, you know, successful individuals, have built great networks over the years. And tapping into that is, you know, how most successful people stay successful and how their families stay successful and how they create generational wealth. It's, you know, making sure that, you know, you're allowing that network to grow and grow organically and, you know, extending the olive branch to your children or those, you know, in your network that you deem, you know, are capable of, you know, kind of carrying that torch. So, that's definitely something that I wanted to make sure I implement in my business, and a big driver in my business moving forward will be how can I then create this, you know, this behemoth and then, you know, be able to give back and bring the next generation of real estate investors and, you know, successful individuals out of the city of Compton and Oakland and some of these inner cities, you know, and help them on the path to success.
I love that you use that word behemoth. I mean,
that's the goal.
I mean, yeah. I mean, look, you could be sitting on a beach, I'm sure, you know, but you're not, and you want to build not just a good, comfortable, you want to build a behemoth so that you can give back, which is huge. It really is. Talk about, are you married, kids?
Yes.
How old are your kids?
My oldest is 3 and my youngest is 1.5.
Oh, wow. You have young ones.
I have little babies.
All right. So when they get the age, you're going to be coaching dad.
I don't think so. I don't know if I can do it.
we'll see. So when you were doing all that travel, then you didn't have a family in tow when you were doing that.
I didn't. The latter part, when I was in Australia my last year, you know, I had my eldest daughter and they came over for that season. But outside of that, no.
So talk about the first single family resident investment that you made. Now, look, you got an MBA contract, you know, and some people on the line, you know, listening are going to be like, oh, I don't feel sorry for this guy. He's got, you know, a huge contract and they may never be able to see themselves there. But maybe I'm wrong. I think the first investment is still always scary, you know? So like, how did you go about looking at that first investment and how'd you pull the trigger?
Oh man. So my first investment property, if you will.
Yes.
It was funny when I think back to it. It was a duplex. And I bought the duplex for $345 here in Southern California. It's a very small duplex, and it's not too far from Long Beach State. But I bought it with the intent on just renovating, doing a renovation and renting it out, and just kind of building a portfolio of those and, you know, creating some cash flow. And I get into this process and I'm dealing with the city with permits. I'm dealing with contractors. They're annoying the heck out of me. And it's just a difficult process. And, you know, here I have this, I think it was a 1200 square foot duplex, that, you know, probably should have cost me, I would say $40,000, you know, to kind of get it up to where I could get it rented out. And, you know, just dealing with bad people and, you know, this is the learning experience, right?
Sure.
I ended up spending closer to $85,000 in repairs.
Oh, wow. More than doubled.
And of course I'm not happy about that. But It finally gets done. I anticipated taking 4 months. It ended up taking about 8. So doubled there as well. And I talked to a realtor buddy of mine. I said, I mean, how's the market here? You know, is it solid? Is it not? You know, you think we could just kind of flip this thing? They said, let's take a look. So, posted pictures, got it up on the market, got an offer in 2 days.
Two days.
And ended up selling it for $515. So I made a little money and, you know, felt good about that. And I didn't have to wait, you know, extended period of time having it on the market. And an individual whose daughter was going to Long Beach State, he wanted to buy, he was going to actually, you know, rent her a place, but felt like this would be a better option for them. And you know, I was very fortunate that my first deal was a success. I know that always isn't the case, and I had a ton of heartache throughout that process. But right. I was able to come out of it unscathed and made some money. And you know, then after that I was hooked. And you know, so kind of started, you know, doing a few more of those, and then got into the commercial space, which is my, I guess, first larger investment on a personal level. I bought a commercial retail center, as I mentioned earlier, here in Orange County.
Wow. That, you know, people can relate to buying their first duplex, right? or looking at their first duplex and being fearful. My first investment was a duplex as well. And, you know, people say, are you bummed out that you bought that duplex? And I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to make a ton of money off the duplex, but it got me in the game. And I learned, and then I went and bought, you know, syndicated a 76 unit deal afterwards. Had I not bought that duplex, I don't think that I would have gone to the next step. And right. Had you not bought that duplex, you might not be, you know, have met that, you know, talked to the guy about the Las Vegas deal and the Orange County deal and now the Compton deal. Like, so one thing leads to another. And yeah, you're lucky that you made money on that deal. But even if you didn't, you learned a ton, mm-hmm. and you probably were still going to stay in the game because you know, you saw how it was done and you saw some of the things that were, you know, maybe you were taking advantage of or whatever, that you could do better on the next deal.
For sure. But,
you know, to the listeners, you know, at some point, and you haven't said it yet, but at some point you have to take action, right? I mean,
yeah.
You have to take action.
And I'd love to talk on my next kind of that retail acquisition because that was very much a take action moment. And so, you know, I invested in smaller properties like the duplex and, you know, single family flips and things of that sort. You know, and you know, you'd make a couple of dollars here and there. But for the amount of time and effort kind of put in, and where I was in my life, it wasn't necessarily worth it. You know, to have the headache, you know, to then right. make what I was making. So I said, I looked myself in the mirror. I said, Josh, you're either going to do this seriously or you're not. It's just point blank. And I got online that night and, you know, just started just hunting properties, looking at stuff, you know, trying to kind of find that next jump, and, found this particular property, reached out to the broker, asked him to send over the OM. And, you know, kind of took a deep dive into the numbers and I asked him to go out to lunch and talk through it. We sat down, you know, had a great lunch and he said, Josh, I want to let you know, you're the first person that's actually met me face to face. You know, I've had a ton of people reach out via email, ton of people, you know, call me and all those things, but you took, you know, action and wanted to, you know, talk face to face with me on this. I want to help you get this property.
Oh, awesome.
And from that point on, we developed a great relationship, and I ended up taking the property down and ended up taking the property down at probably, I shaved off $1 million on the purchase price. And that was through, you know, relationship development. And I think, you know, that's an important factor in this business is, you know, building relationships and understanding people and, you know, making sure that everybody leaves the deal feeling happy. I think there's a bunch of shrewd negotiators, you know, that feel great about, you know, kind of taking their lion's share of deals. But if both sides leave happy, I think that's at least my way of doing business. And I was able to do that on this property. And, you know, I'll plan on doing that, you know, moving forward.
I like that a lot. So what was the net purchase price that you purchased at?
$9.54 million.
$9.54 million. So, you know, that duplex, $350K duplex, right, to $9.54 million. Like I can't tell people enough that, like, you have to start somewhere. Mm-hmm. And if you don't get started, you can't get to the big, you know, the big time. And you have to have these mental, you know, building blocks. And so now you're there, and now you're how big was the Las Vegas deal you guys put together?
That's $100 million development.
$100 million development. So from $350,000 duplex to $9.54 million to $100 million, you know, development deal. It's seriously, it's a matter of mental. Okay. Can you believe that you can achieve it? And then secondly, relationships, mm-hmm. you know, who can you partner with to help you get to the next level? And, you know, some people will reach out to me on Instagram. They're like, "Hey, Darren, I want to get into this, you know, but why would anybody want to partner with me?" Right? Some people have a limiting mindset that will, you know, they don't feel that they're worthy to, you know, and the reality is, look, there's always people that are ahead of you. There's always people that are behind you, mm-hmm. but we all have different skill sets, and there's somebody that you can benefit. You know, it may not be one guy may not be looking for the skill set that you have, but a different guy, it might be the perfect partnership. So right. you got to believe in yourself, and then you got to go out and hunt to find the right partners.
Absolutely. And find your lane to create value. I think right. that's another thing that people lose sight of. You know, on our proposal to the city for that 100-acre redevelopment, you know, we partner with two groups that are massive groups, massive, you know, multiple billions in assets under management. And in our conversation with the city, you know, there was a community benefit and community element that we spoke to, I believe, in a way that they couldn't. And that opened the door to these other opportunities. But it was, how can you create value for somebody else and then leverage that value to open doors elsewhere? And, you know, I feel like people need to keep that in the back of their minds, is how can I create value?
Absolutely. Major key. I mean, anybody, you read any books on building wealth, they say, you know, go out and help others and it will find you, right?
Absolutely.
So how do you raise capital for your deals?
So primarily through family and friends so far.
Okay.
You know, I've been fortunate to, you know, have some family and friends that have done all right for themselves.
right.
In addition to that, we are speaking.
What percentage of that comes from the basketball world?
Zero, actually. Well,
zero.
I have zero basketball NBA or former basketball players as investors.
Oh wow! I would have thought that you would have. You know, because some of them may not be, you know how to manage their money or not focused on managing their money, and they know, like, and trust you, and you could help them there. So maybe that's an untapped reserve right there.
Yeah, it will be eventually. As I continue to build out my platform and prove my track record, you know, when dealing with athletes, you have that barrier, which is their financial managers. And I've used those guys, you know, as well to act as a barrier and make sure that, you know, they're that first line of defense for me. And you know, people are always leery of, you know, individuals that are starting out in the space. And so, right. you know, we're dealing with that. We have a sports team owner as an investor. So think about that. One of the guys that's writing their checks, feel confident enough to invest in what we're doing. But it's been that, and now as we continue to build, we're branching out to institutions and, you know, kind of larger pockets of capital, family offices, high net worth individuals. You know, and as we continue to grow, you know, that raising capital component will become easier, but it's what I spend probably 90% of my time doing. And it's a grind. I've never heard more no's in my life. And, you know, it's definitely a humbling experience, but you just got to do it.
That's so funny. I mean, again, listeners, you have to understand, here's a guy who, like, he's played basketball at the elite levels, right? And he still hears rejection, but it doesn't keep him down. You know, after you hear rejection, you go on to the next person. And the way I look at it is it's opportunity. You know, you're presenting opportunity to other people, and some people get it and some people don't. And some people might wait for you to do, you know, your first deal or second deal and watch you, and maybe they'll come in later on. And there's some people that just can't ever get off the fence, you know? And so, one word I would probably use for you based on what you've had to deal with is grit. I mean, you have to be willing to really push the boundaries on what you could achieve, you know, physically, for you to have played for 15 years and then now, you know, taking that mentally also and taking that into the real estate world. How do people reach out to you if they want to get to know you?
Yeah. So I'm on all social media platforms. My Instagram is Jay Chillington, JCHILLINGTON. I'm on LinkedIn, Josh Childress. And, you know, via email, josh@landspiregroup.com. I'm very accessible. Love to have conversations with other real estate investors, you know, hopefully do deals together. I'd say, you know, one of the things we're running into now, which is a crazy problem to have, if you will, is, you know, institutional investors they invest larger chunks of cash, right? And so, you know, I was speaking to a couple of groups that won't write an equity check less than $50 million. And
wow.
Yeah, it's crazy to think, like, you know, we're presenting, right. you know, a deal for $2 million of equity. And it's like, it's too small, Josh. Come back to us when you level up. Right. but to that point, you know, we're looking for opportunities to kind of fit into that box and start to, you know, offer them access to deals that they necessarily wouldn't get access to. And that's kind of obviously the other difficult part in this business is sourcing opportunities. So, you know, we're actively out doing both and, you know, looking forward to building a strong portfolio.
That's fantastic. Well, besides basketball, what do you do outside of work?
I am a terrible golfer.
Are you terrible? How would you define terrible?
I base my success on the amount of balls that I lose. So,
All right. So maybe you're on a different level. I'm kind of 85 to 95. You know, I don't know who's going to show up on any given day. I try to get out once a week with my boys, but I do tip
105 to 110 if I had to.
All right. Well, look, if you're ever in the Dallas area, definitely look me up. I'll do the same if I'm out in California. Mm-hmm. I really am excited that David put us together. You know, you never know what somebody's going to be like until you actually talk to them. And, you know, you're a successful guy, but you come at it from a humble perspective, you know, and I think that you are an inspiration to your hometown, to your family. And I think the listeners are going to get a lot out of what they just heard. So listeners, I hope you enjoyed that one. Until next week, signing off.
Thank you for listening to Darren Batchelder's Real Estate Investing Show at darrenbatchelder.com. If you liked the episode, please provide us with a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or your podcast platform of choice. If you already provided us with a 5-star review, then thank you, and please share the show with a friend.